services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, and it is that time of the week. It's time for the greatest radio show that you're probably ever going to hear for the rest of your life. On this, the greatest Tuesday you've had all week. I am your host, Dave Little John, and joining me today is
Justin Bruggeman.
And Justin, we have not done the show together in quite some time.
No, it's been a while.
Heck, I haven't done the show for a little while.
No,
I was gallivanting around and back in town. It's going to be back, although usually I'm like, oh, I'm delighted to be back. I like what I do.
Right.
But I had a good time. Family and I went to visit my oldest daughter. She's been in Brazil. So we got to go visit Brazil, and that was really cool. Talk about some True Wealth moments made with the family.
I bet.
Yeah, it was fun. But now we're back to real life.
Welcome back.
Thanks. Well, here's the cool thing, right? As of market close today, we are officially back to break even for the year on the S&P 500.
Perfect.
Right? Like, okay, well, we'll just hit the reset button. And
it's like nothing happened.
I know. Let's just have a happy new year all over again. Right? You know, only now it's May.
So. Yeah.
quick update just to give everybody a snapshot of where we're at. So the S&P squeaked above. It's now year-to-date positive 0.1%. Now, there's a couple more indexes out there that we track, right? NASDAQ,
right.
More tech. It's still down about 3.5% or a little more. Although it was up today over 1%, well, actually 1.6%. And then the Dow, which is a more concentrated index in terms of the number of positions. It's just 30 positions, but it is pretty diversified in that it's 30 positions from different industries.
Right.
Right. And it's still down, let's just call it 1%, like 0.95, we'll just call it 1%. Still negative for the year. A lot of this, though, is specifically because of United Health Group, which is one of the Dow 30.
Right.
It's just been pretty beat up. They had some earnings guidance that was negative. And then
CEO exit or something today, I think.
The CEO, gosh, it's what, been 3 or 4 months now? Maybe a little longer since there was a CEO.
The last
he was
event.
Murdered,
yeah.
Right? I mean, he was murdered. And boy, that was a weird situation. Maybe we don't talk about that
today. Right.
But yeah, so the markets, hey, they do what they do. Why is this so relevant? About a month or so ago, you'd believe the sky was falling.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, about
it
a month
was,
and a half
oh, there's
ago.
There's going to be tariffs and we're not going to make it, right? The economy's going to disappear. The dollar's going to evaporate. Every known industry on the planet is all going to cease to produce.
Right.
We're all going to start having to heat our homes by campfire. And we're going to have trouble finding clean water and the toilets won't flush.
And toilet paper.
Yeah, and toilet paper. It's like COVID, only worse. Well, so far, that has not been the case.
No, we've retracted.
Yeah, so it's remarkable. Some of the biggest players that got really hammered, in particular, NVIDIA,
mm-hmm.
is one that's a major contributor to the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. But NVIDIA, I think it's in the NASDAQ. It's for sure in the S&P 500.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know if it trades on
I'm
the NASDAQ
sure.
or not, but I think it is. But anyway, NVIDIA, big tech company, really big deal with chip processing in AI space. And about 6 months ago, there was an announcement that China came up with cheaper AI.
Right.
And NVIDIA was not going to be able to sell as many chips. And then there were going to be tariffs. And then they weren't going to be able to sell chips to China anyway. And everybody and the stock gets beat up by 20-30%. And it's
more.
Just climbing right back out of the hole. It's not back to even, right? But it's back to making money and being a darling in the markets. So
all because we push pause.
So here is my question, Justin. Is this the calm before a bigger storm, or is this just, hey, it's Tuesday, it's what the markets do, and away we go?
I don't know. This kind of feels
right answer,
like
the, by the way.
Yeah, I don't
yeah,
know.
Like, none of us knows.
It kind of feels like the calm before the storm. You know, I think once more we get more data in, as earnings continue coming out, we're going to get a better picture of actually where we're at economically.
Sure.
Because we still are trying to slow down inflation. That's still a primary indicator.
I think the most recent inflation read was 2.3%.
Right.
Core inflation is still at 2.8, which is an interesting animal there, that food and energy are still, you know, they're coming down, but that a lot of the core stuff we're spending on, it's still expensive. Housing in particular has just been really expensive. So inflation coming down. I'm sort of shocked because it seems like earnings, we keep expecting them to come down and they just sort of levitate. And I haven't seen, I mean, the UnitedHealthcare thing was kind of the first major market participant that came out and they guided lower.
Yeah.
Right. And that happened.
Their forward guidance on a few have been in lower.
Yeah.
Looking more flat or a little less than what was expected from, you know, a year back.
Do you think that that is just companies becoming a little bit more defensive in how they posture, or you think it really is going to be lower? You know, is it because of the, a lot of this guidance was coming out right as, you know, the tariff talks were in the middle.
Right.
And now, if you've not paid attention, everybody, we've paused.
Paused. 90 which, days.
Which I'd love to go back and listen to. You know, Matt and I did a show a few weeks ago, and one of the things I said was, I believe that tariffs are a tool to get people to the negotiation table,
mm-hmm.
and that what we are warned about versus what we get are not going to be the same thing.
Right.
And that appears to
Weird.
Be playing out.
Yes.
So, yeah, there were people that were like, oh, you don't understand the economy, we're going to destroy everything. And it's like, really? I'll admit, just so everybody knows, I was pretty hot the way this was handled, because the announcement that tariffs were going to be initially paused came while the markets were open.
Right.
And that, to me, felt a little bit, a lot bit, like market manipulation. Right. Mm-hmm. While the markets were down, president comes out and says, "Now we're going to go ahead and pause these things." And he had forecasted on his own social network earlier that day, "Today's a good day to invest." And you're like, huh.
Did he again?
No, that was the same
day.
That happened before. I don't know if it's happened again. But
yeah,
that day
not.
It happened, and I was like, whoa, that is unorthodox.
Yeah, on True Social or something like that,
yeah,
whatever
yeah.
it was.
So anyway, I guess, what is it? The question, this kind of comes up. We talk about the concept of a soft economic landing. First of all, when you hear that, what do you think when you hear the term soft landing?
Well, it's not crash.
Okay, that's good. Good.
Which, I mean, I've kind of cheated a little bit, as you know, and because we're in the business of, you know, where that phrase kind of came from is, you know, a little bit of not spiking unemployment, you know, interest rates either staying the same or, you know, even guided lower, I guess what that would be, they would call that, you know, to kind of pick the economy back up when it's slowing instead of it just radically correcting.
Yeah.
Which would be hard landing.
Yeah. Hard landings are when, you know, you break things. Soft landing, I think, is, you know, it's a subjective term in a sense, but it's the idea that monetary policy by the Federal Reserve and to a certain extent fiscal policy, although that's been pretty non-existent, the monetary policy is effective in slowing the economy without creating a contraction or a recession, right? So you don't have any negative GDP. You just successfully slow it down without really break. So I would say it's like you're going into a corner and you slow down enough to hang on to the corner and come out the other side and press on,
right,
as opposed to having to really kind of, you know, hammer the brakes hard enough that, you know, you lock the seatbelt up.
Right.
So, all right. Well, there you go. That's the concept of soft landing. My guess, my bigger question, you know, now, so how long have we been working together, Justin?
8 years now.
8 years. That's nuts. And so that means you've got a decade under your belt in this business.
Yep.
Let me, I mean, I didn't prep you for this question, but I'm going to ask it on air anyway because it's fun. After now doing this for 10 years, and you've seen a few head fakes like this before,
mm-hmm.
what are some of the things that you would say over the course of your career you've kind of learned through these sorts of scenarios, and what are some things that you would be watching out for?
Well, a little bit of it is, you know, over time these do correct. You know, if you think the economy in the United States strong is going to continue to be, then markets eventually will go higher. The speed at which information travels now is, I would say, the biggest difference I see now from what I did even 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because it is at your fingertips and getting notifications and just the speed that just money flows now and mm-hmm. how information transfers is almost unbelievable.
It's, yeah. I wish unbelievable was the thing, you know, because we see it all the time. I'm like, well, I believe it because
right.
we're living in it. But it's really a challenge to adapt to. Here's my observation, right? The trading is harder than ever.
Yeah.
And investing, your time horizon is more important than ever.
Right.
Right. I want to unpack that a little bit more, just because I think that there are some the changing dynamics of the marketplace presents some challenges that they're not new challenges, but they're things that I think we should flag them. I think for our investors out there that you're trying to navigate this, you know, first of all, I've got good news for those of you that are listening and you're like, well, you guys are my guys, right? I said, we do this for you. But for those of you that right. are not our clients, we're going to talk a little bit about how do you navigate some of the risks in this marketplace and how do you sort of think your way through these processes, knowing that the game keeps evolving.
Right.
Right. But we got to take our first break. So why don't we do this? We'll grab that. So stick around. And on the flip side of this, we're going to unpack a little bit. Like, what are some of the risks? Some of them, I got a pro tip for you. Some of them may actually be between your own ears.
So weird.
Stick around and we'll describe more when we come back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Justin Bergman.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 92.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where I, your host, Dave Littlejohn, who's delighted to be back, is in studio with
Justin Brogman.
And just a reminder, if you are just now tuning in, you can get the parts you've missed by grabbing our podcast. It's available at littlejohnfs.com or your favorite podcast location. Just look up the True Wealth Radio Show, and you'll see our weird cartoons and all that stuff. But today we are talking about the markets a little bit and how, you know, I left for a couple weeks yeah. on family vacay. Things were not ideal. Came back and everything's like, hey, we're good. Two yeah. weeks, we're back to break even for the year. And I don't know what you're talking about.
You might have to go back.
Yes, tell me more. But, you know, I don't know. I think you said this well, Justin. What has fundamentally changed in the last 2 weeks?
Just a pause.
Yeah, and just a pause. Yeah, the answer is, I think, yeah, nothing.
Right.
Right? There's a lot of rhetoric around tariffs, mm-hmm. but right now we're basically kind of where we were.
Yep.
And a bunch of countries that wanted to reopen trade discussion, we have.
Yeah.
And
back okay. to the table. Back to the table we go.
So, what does that tell us about the way the markets have behaved this year?
Well, it could mean that it was an overreaction
yeah.
at the beginning, or this is the overreaction.
So I would like to throw out, I warned you guys that are listening. I said, hey, there are some risks out there, and one of them is between your ears.
Yeah.
Right? I think we have some perception risk here, and I'm going to call myself out on this one.
Okay.
Right? Watching the markets move moment to moment, day to day, really incentivizes you to think about what you've purchased and try to assess the value in real time.
Okay.
But that's not a terribly good investor approach.
Right.
Right? If you bought, you know, if I buy something, so let's use a fictional example. And let's, it's fictional, it's not investment advice, but let me give you like something I really thought about on this trip.
Okay.
We're down in Brazil, and you know, driving in Brazil is a real interesting experience. It's just not as organized as it is here in the States.
Okay.
And the roads are not as, the roads are organized, but they don't have things like freeways and bypasses the way we do here in the States. Like, you want to go somewhere in the city, you just bob and weave around all the different buildings.
Okay.
And, of course, the topography is its own challenge, too. We kind of see that in, like, Portland or Seattle when there's rivers and mountains and things. The roads are not just a grid, right? They go in all kinds of different directions.
Okay.
So we didn't try to rent a car and drive there. We just grabbed an Uber.
Okay.
And it was super convenient.
Really?
It was really convenient. I don't think we ever waited more than 8 minutes for an Uber the entire trip.
Holy cow.
Yeah. It was always fast and cheap. And you knew who was getting you. You knew where you were going. In fact, most people would say Uber was safer than a taxi.
Interesting.
Yeah. You could see the rating of the drivers. You knew who they were. They, you know, like, so it was a really good experience. Now, if I were to look at that and say, and so again, I'm going to just tell you guys a story, but do not act on this. Okay. I have to say that because when you're an investment guy and you start talking about something, it's like, oh, I heard this thing, right? Nope, not giving advice. Okay. Not giving advice. But I found myself going, you know, there's all this talk about driverless vehicles, but yep. I looked at the situation in Brazil, and Brazil is not unlike other emerging economies, and thought, there is not a really good way that driverless technology is going to be integrated into chaos like that. Because they have things like motorcycles,
right,
weaving between traffic. Cars get really close together, like way beyond what you'd be normally comfortable with here in the States, right? And they're driving at 30, 40 miles an hour, and they're 6-8 inches apart sometimes.
Right.
And that's just how they do it there. And I'm sure there's, you know, accidents and things.
No, I'm sure.
But the weird thing is that they don't usually get more than 30, 40 miles an hour. So
okay.
I don't know that there's as many fatalities in cars because they're not doing the freeway speeds that we see here in the States.
Right.
But nevertheless, I don't know how they're going to get driverless vehicles into a circumstance like that anytime soon.
Yeah, I don't know.
So then Uber starts to look a lot more attractive, going, well, that's got a lot of potential in that marketplace to have like a long run.
Right.
And that becomes a more interesting investment. It's, well, how many emerging economies where Uber's going to be there before driverless vehicles? And the other thing is it's super expensive to get stuff into Brazil, right? So like a driverless vehicle is not going to be manufactured in Brazil right now. So it would be way too expensive because of their import taxes on other vehicles. So like, okay. So it starts to look like a pretty good fundamental story around
right.
buying Uber if I thought that it was going to be a good long-term investment in emerging economies. Okay, so that's my base case. Now what? I go looking at the day-to-day price activity of Uber, thinking that Uber's going to be a dominant player for the next 10 years.
Right.
And I'm watching it every 10 seconds. Okay, well, that's what does the next 10 seconds have to do with my opinion of the value of Uber over the next 10 years? Answer, nothing.
Yeah, only what the change in value will make you think.
Yeah, unless I had to sell it.
Right.
I can buy that thing and I can just walk away from it. But for whatever reason, investors get tempted. I mean, I know the reason, right? It's just this, it's the Las Vegas temptations, the gambling temptations. Say, but what if I could buy and sell it the right way?
Right.
I'll sell it at the top, I'll buy it at the bottom. I do that a few times. I'd make so much more money than if I just waited 10 years. Except statistically, you're so unlikely
right.
to do it well. And it's because you're competing against people with so many more resources and so much more access to information than you have. And so I worry that people get coaxed into thinking like a trader instead of an investor.
Yeah. And I mean, even we can kind of get hung up into it if we start watching it too much. And it's like, and
you
if
mean
you
like
get
as a pro,
yeah. And I mean, you get lots of different movements, and it makes you want to act even though you don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
That's why having rules matter.
Okay, talk. What do you mean? What do you mean?
Or just guidelines in.
Like pirate code?
Maybe.
Every time I hear guidelines, I think of like the stupid, more like bike guidelines, you know? Like, okay, Barbosa.
More trading rules to take the emotions out of it. Because the short-term emotions can damper the long-term solution.
Yeah. So why, I mean, I have an answer to this, but I want to see what you say to it. Why do you want to take the emotion out?
Well, because there can be more errors in just human emotion, because it can be an irrational thought instead of a rational thought.
Okay. It's the subjectivity is my answer, right? And I know that you're kind of saying the same thing. I'm just fishing for it. Subjectivity is something that doesn't really go into an equation well, right? Well, A plus B plus kinda equals C. Like,
C-ish.
What's kinda? It's like, you can't use, that doesn't math. You know, it just doesn't fit into an equation where you can justify. And the problem is your emotions are, well, how do you reproduce the same emotional state in the future to make the exact same decision? I don't know. Right? So what the rules do is they say, well, because my emotion's so unreliable, let me try to not use that. And the rules will help me avoid my emotion. And then what your rules do is they eliminate variables.
Yeah.
Okay. And so my definition is, if like in math, the process of simplification is in math is eliminating the variables.
Right.
So that's what you want to do is get rid of as many variables as possible so that what we're left with is more, at least understandable. You know, and the problem with the markets is like there's infinity variables.
Yeah.
Right? Because of the number of participants and who knows what's driving their decisions. But that's why short-term trading creates such a problem. I think that's the amazing thing about Warren Buffett, honestly, is that like he just has seemed to never really get that interested in what everybody else thinks.
Yeah.
He's just like, so fiercely independent. He's like, I don't care what the market thinks right now. I care what I think.
Like, I'm right.
Yeah.
Over a long enough time frame, I'm right.
Well, and I don't know if that's like the most arrogant thing in the world or the most brilliant thing in the world or like both. I don't even know. But what I do know is, the more that I take the noise out of the market and focus on, well, are these good ideas in the first place?
Right.
The more that I'm willing to tolerate things moving up and down and shenanigans. Right? I mean, I feel like I should tell the story of Affirm.
Go ahead.
It's a fast story, right? Affirm is a company that does payments over time, which also is something very popular in Brazil right now. But it's something that Amazon was playing with, and there's other
Walmart
vendors.
Does too.
Yeah, and so Affirm is not, it's like a credit card, but it's just installment payments.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the company went way up in value, and I bought some a few years ago, and you know, was it like $180 a share or something? And then it collapsed all the way down to like two.
Mm-hmm.
But I still thought the concept was sound, and when I looked at the fundamentals underneath it, it's like, well, it was way overvalued when I bought it, and I was buying it on the idea that it was a frenzy, right? I was game-stopping the thing.
Right.
But I bought more at $2 and more at $5 and more at $7. And then my basis was down to like $14 by the time I was done. Because I didn't buy a ton at the high end. But
right.
The same number of dollars at $2 bought me a boatload of shares compared to $170. So then I was able to kind of waited out, and today it's trading somewhere in the $50 or $60 range, and I'm like, that's a really profitable trade over 5 years, right? But so you, the average return over 5 years is, you know, 300-400% on
right.
that position, but initially I lost 90%.
Yeah, so
you know, or
you
more.
Had to crawl
so
out.
You're like, huh? If I had treated it like a trade, it would have just been like, well, you're done. Right.
Yeah.
But instead, I treated it like what I thought it would be, which is, well, given a longer time horizon, this is very probable that because it has the most market share and name recognition, it's going to be the vendor of choice for a lot of the major online retailers. And that's largely played out. And again, none of this is a recommendation to go buy it. It's an example of how
thinking like an investor instead of a trader works out if you get rid of the noise of short term.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's a big gap between our ears that we got to worry about. I guess the question for our investors that we ought to answer here, first is like, you know, when do we take our next break? Like now, but it's what should we do as investors here and what should we be watching for in the marketplace, you know? And so let's do this. Let's grab a break.
Okay.
It's time. So we'll do that. We'll come back and let's talk about strategy maneuvers right now.
Okay.
You know, how are we approaching this as advisors and money managers? And how can you as an investor take a look at this market and what do we do? Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Justin Brugman.
Yeah, True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where I am in studio today with
Justin Brugman.
And yeah, we do this enough. Dave Littlejohn here. You guys know how that works. Just a reminder, we got a podcast. You can grab it. It's at littlejohnfs.com. Why is it there? It's also at 541radio.com. And if you subscribe to podcasts, right, it's at Apple and Android and all those places. But yeah, I guess this is technically an advertisement. Like technically it is, right? This show is one of these
sure.
where, but I've never really treated it like that. It's more like, well, let me talk about, you know, let's teach people on this stuff and folks will decide like, hey, I want to do this myself. I got this. Or, hey, thanks. I'll go share it with a guy right. I'm working with or gal. Right. Or maybe I better go call these guys because it's like I don't want to do it. And they seem like a good fit. So, yeah, which, you know, if that's you, hey, give us a call. Markets have calmed down a little bit, Justin. Right.
So, yeah.
So now what? Like, what do you do? Like I'm asking you, but I'm also like, what do you think as a firm? We've talked about this. What are we doing right now as the markets have sort of simmered down a little bit?
Well, it's a little bit of, we can kind of readdress, not readdress a strategy, but now that things have calmed down, you can actually may be able to sit back and look at, all right, where are things headed? You know, and what sectors are you in versus what you want to be in going forward? So just a real kind of dive into kind of our portfolios and whether they're doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not, then what adjustments need to be made? And if they are, you know, what tweaks need to be made there? So kind of just a matter of just kind of seeing where we're at, where you're at. You know, everyone, I guess. And then seeing where, you know, where the puck is headed and, you know, getting in the right boat, I guess, at that point.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that let's talk about actual nuts and bolts strategy for a minute. You know, one of the things that we were talking about in our investment committee, and we talked about this when the markets were way down, but we also talked about, you know, like this is relevant every single day, okay? When do you change investments, right?
Like, well, it would. Well, I guess define change. Like, when would you sell?
Say, like,
when would you sell
something, buy something different?
You know, I guess whether conditions change or it's just overbought on technical levels, just it's priced out of, you know, the norm.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not even a sell; it's a reposition to come back to when it gets back into normal levels.
Yeah. And the answer is it's complicated on this one. So when do you sell something? When you think there's a better opportunity to do something else.
That's yeah.
Okay, that's the first. It's like so simple, but we can overthink it.
Overcomplicate
right?
it.
And well, you weren't overcomplicating this. What we do, because I did ask Justin this, right? Like when Justin's talking about like what do we do when we have a position that's outside of its target weighting, right? That's when we rebalance.
Yeah.
Okay. And if it's because it grew too much, right? Which can you really have an investment grow too much? Well, no. But you can have an investment that grows to where it's disproportionately bigger than you want it to be, right?
Right.
You're overweight, and you're going, well, now I own this thing because it's done so well. But if I keep concentrated in this position and something goes wrong, it will hurt me more too.
Right.
So you intentionally trim the position, and then you take the proceeds and then you put them into other investments that you want to shore up. Because what you're effectively doing is saying, well, this thing's outperformed. So
right.
Let me sell it while it's high. That doesn't mean it won't go higher, but let me sell it when it's high and let me buy something else that I still like, but that's priced lower. Right, because the markets are kind of cyclical about things, or things come in and out of favor. Right, people do trade this market, and I'm not suggesting to become a trader, but I am saying that if you have a strategy and you stick to it and you're consistent, the discipline of those decisions tends to compound in additional benefit to you. Right.
Right.
What are some of the reasons that you wouldn't rebalance?
Still wanting to own it long term.
Yep, you're okay with being overweight.
Right.
Or you're close to switching from a short-term to a long-term capital gain.
That would be...
Right? There's tax management decisions here. You know, if it's in a retirement account, you don't really care.
Right.
But if it's in a taxable account, it matters.
It does. Right?
And so there are strategic and tactical elements at play when you make these decisions. Right? And that's something that we have to deal with as money managers all the time. So... and then this is a really interesting one, right? The way that the market trades, do you know what price you're getting? This is not on our list, by the way, but there's this concept called best execution.
Okay, like, right.
Here's why it matters. It matters if you are using a custodian. I don't care who it is, but let's say that they have free trades.
Right.
Right? Oh, you're getting free trades at Robinhood, let's say. And I can pick on them a little bit because Robinhood did buy one of the custodians that we operate.
Right.
They bought them in a merger takeover kind of deal. And so we're starting to learn more about the culture of Robinhood behind the scenes.
Right.
But there's nothing that's really free.
No.
Right? So if you're not paying for a trade and you're entering a market order, the question is, are you getting best execution? Like, are you getting the best price available? Maybe not. Right, there could be better trades out there. I mean, you might be close, and you know, we trade in fractions of a cent now behind the scenes, so you're probably still pretty close to best execution. But rest assured, they are selling order flow to somebody else.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Somebody else is going to get a look at the trade that you're placing before it's placed, so that they can decide if they want to position ahead of or against you. Right, so that's happening now. And so don't think that the playing field is level for everybody, because it's not. That's one of the challenges with traders. Can you get access to custodians with best execution? Yeah, you probably can. But I don't know that it's Robinhood, right? You may not get free trades in order to get best execution.
Right.
There is kind of a little bit of a trick around best execution, though. This is a real strategy that any of you guys can use. I don't think I'm offering investment advice here. I think I'm talking mechanics right now. You know, one of the ways that you can avoid having an issue with best execution pricing?
Put in a limit order?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Explain to our listeners what that is.
You decide what price you want to purchase it at, and you can put the order that if it hits that price or better, it'll execute.
Right. So... I've not only done a lot of this on the show, but it is kind of an interesting one. So two primary types of orders that go into trading systems, market orders and limit orders.
Right.
Limit order has a specified price.
Yep.
I want to sell this thing for $17.17 or better.
Or better.
Okay. Then if you put the trade on the books and the price gets to $17 and no higher, your order doesn't happen.
Right.
Okay. Let's say, though, that you want out of this thing win, lose, or draw. You can use a market order.
Mm-hmm.
And the market order is going to go say, all right, who out there is willing to buy this right now? What's the best price I can find? That's best execution. Or what's the price I can find?
Right.
And that's execution, right? And the trade happens, and you're out of the trade, right? And so maybe you were trading at $17. You wanted $17. The price was $17.01. You put the order in and hit go. But there were no buyers until $16.50. Guess what?
You got $16.50.
Yeah. So market orders
are going to be whatever price flashes on the screen when you hit go.
Right.
Limit orders, you're going to name your price. But you're not going to get guaranteed execution.
Correct.
So there you go. But it does avoid the best execution conundrum because you know the price you've asked for.
Right.
So, you know, you're not hoping you get it. You're saying, this is what it's going to be or I'm not going to take it.
You're getting it one way or another.
Yeah.
How it gets to there is a whole other.
Right. And there's neat things about this, right? There's cool trading technology that says, well, give me this price or better, or give me this price just for today. If it doesn't happen, go ahead and kill the order, and then I'll start over tomorrow, or leave it on the books for the next month. If it gets there any time in the next month, I'll take it. Or, you know, so there's interesting things that you can do with it. But this is not the show to talk about the trading mechanics. But you should be aware of that as investors. Like, hey, it matters how I buy this. Oh, that's a fun one. Well, I'm going to leave you guys as a cliffhanger on this one. How does price work on best execution for a mutual fund, which is what the majority of investors out there are probably dealing with? So I want you to put that in your mind. We're going to come back to it. So let's grab our last break here. And when we come back, Justin, you get to explain to our user. He's loving this, right? All right, how do I get the best execution price in a mutual fund? And then here's the real trick question. Load or no load? Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Justin Brogerman.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio today with
Justin Brogerman.
And Justin, I set our listeners up with a cliffhanger at the break. Okay, if you don't remember the question, you have to go listen to the podcast now. I'm pretty sure that it's mandatory or, I don't know, your check engine light will come on or something. So, but the question is, we're talking about trade execution, right?
Right. Best price.
Today's been all about, that's like, how do you get the best price when you're making a trade? And because today we're talking about the markets sort of calmed down.
Mm-hmm.
When the market's a little calmer, it's a good time to review your strategy.
Yep.
But in strategy, it's like, well, what if I need to make changes? Okay, well, then when and how and what's the price? So, and now here we are in this question. Most people have their own mutual funds.
Right.
Right? And maybe it's in your 401k, maybe you have an IRA. But mutual funds are super, super common. How do you get best execution in mutual funds?
You don't.
Oh, you got it right. It's a trick question, guys. But can you explain why?
Because it settles at the end of the day. So you would be able to see the movement in the markets, theoretically. And then you could purchase a mutual fund.
So here's the thing about a mutual fund, right? You're investing through a company that is taking the funds in, and they are commingling the funds with all of the other investors, and then they're issuing shares associated for you. And at the end of each trading day, they reconcile the money that came in and the money that's going out.
Right.
And if more money that came in than went out, they create more shares. But if more money went out than came in, they sell assets and redeem the fund, right? But they can't do that until they know how much the ledger balance at the end of the day. So you don't know the final price until the market closed. So there is no best execution because the company itself has determined, one, what their underlying investment portfolio looks like, and then two, they have their fees associated that are going to get pulled from that account too. So you're going to get the net amount.
The NAV?
Yeah, net asset value. Well, in this case, you're going to get the NAV does include the fee, right? Net asset value includes fees in there.
Right.
Right. But the operating costs of the fund are going to be applied against the redemption.
Right.
It's all priced in is what I'm saying. So there is no point in the middle of the day where you're like, oh, the mutual fund is, here's the bid and the ask on this fund.
Right.
The bid and the ask, by the way, is how much people are willing to buy and how much people are willing to sell for. because, you know, it takes two people to match up on the bid and the ask for that transaction to occur. So you always have the what the seller's willing to sell for and what the buyer's willing to buy for. But in a mutual fund, you don't. You have the company handling the inflows and outflows.
Right.
And so they're going to set the price. That's why best execution is not determined by your brokerage. Now, you can look at share classification. I kind of threw a wrinkle at you, like no load versus load. Like, what does that mean?
Well, there's a commission fee on the beginning or the end or none.
Yeah. It's less common these days, but if you've ever had somebody say, "Oh, yeah, well, you know, well, what does it cost me to hire you?" And say, "Well, nothing. It's built into the investments that
right.
we use. It's already there." Well, what they're usually saying is, "Oh, well, in that case, you're going to buy mutual funds, and the mutual fund in the pricing structure is going to pay me a commission."
Right.
And you're either going to see that, you know, you put $100 in and what you see on your statement is $96 because they pulled the commission out and paid it to me, or you're going to see $100 because you put $100 in. But if you sell it early, there's going to be a back-end fee where they claw the money out because you sold it too soon, right? So it's sort of that they get you on the way in or they get you on the way out.
Yep.
And the trick is if you wait long enough, then they've recovered their cost and then you get to keep it, right?
Yep.
So keep it in there for 5, 6, 7 years. Great. No more clawbacks at the end. So that's how that works. But there's less and less of that in the marketplace than there used to be. Right, I think the days of the stockbroker are coming to an end.
Right,
you know, you're just seeing a lot more of the fiduciary advisor, fee for service. Usually, it's a percentage of the assets being managed. It kind of aligns. This is more what our firm does, right? It aligns the money manager and the investor's interest the same. So if everybody's making or losing money together, because it's just a pure percentage of what's going on. And it does get cheaper by the dozen. So bigger accounts have smaller percentages.
Right.
So, fun question on that one, by the way. Why do you not want to, why is it a problem if you have somebody says, "Well, I only get paid if I make you money. If we don't make you money, we don't charge anything."
It could cause you to take unnecessary risks, would be the biggest one.
It's the adverse incentive to the manager because, well, I have no disincentive to avoid.
Right.
You know, I have no disincentive if I avoid risk, right? Like, hey, if I take risk and I hit a home run, I get paid. If I take risk and I don't hit a home run, I don't get paid. So I may as well swing for the fences.
Right.
Right, like there's just not the same accountability there that you get with, hey, you know, we win and lose at the same time together, regardless. But some people, I think, do astutely ask, "Well, wait a second. So if my account's going down, you still get paid?"
Right.
It's like, well, the service didn't stop. Right. So it's we're just not getting paid as much. We are suffering, and we feel it with you.
You're right.
I'm saying we because that's how we do this, right? Like our firm does this. But do you really want to not pay somebody in that environment? Because what you're effectively doing, again, is saying, well, you better crank that risk up. You know who does that, by the way, who cranks the risk up oftentimes and does have like incentive-based pay? Hedge funds.
Right.
A lot of hedge fund structures have an incentive where like, oh, if you beat a certain metric, then you have to do a profit share with the hedge fund.
Okay.
Right. So there's something called like a 2 and 20. So 2% management fee and then 20% of the profits above a benchmark. Right. And so those the different animals there. But this isn't the hedge fund show either, because that's not what the typical investor is engaged in.
No.
We don't deal with hedge funds in any material amounts. It doesn't mean we never do, but like it's not a typical part of our approach. So, all right. Well, look, in the dwindling time that we have here,
how are we going to finish this up?
Well, let me ask you this: now that the markets have kind of recovered and we're break even, and let's pretend that we're just in retirement accounts, so we don't have to worry about taxes. What would you be looking at? Like, if somebody comes into our office and they've got investments, they're like, "Well, what should I do?" How would you be going through? Give me like a quick 90-second breakdown of the analysis.
Well, the first would be the time horizon for the money, when you need access, if you're accessing it now versus, 10 years from now.
Okay.
A risk profile of where the client is and would be and wants to be going forward. And an analysis of their current portfolio is, kind of through this volatility in the markets, what's overpriced bought, I guess would be the phrase, or oversold, or
we have some metrics in our own office where overbought and oversold. That's a kind of a weird and right. subjective term. We have some less subjective methodologies for that, but
it has grown more than
firm,
than its peer group, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, and we have some other statistical data that we use to say, like, okay, statistically, this thing's, you know, higher than it should be over a period of time or below a period of time. So there's some statistical stuff that we do, but not everybody's going to do that, right? So
right.
They all have their own way to bake the cake.
And whether you're over-concentrated in, you know, a certain sector that may have been, you know, done well through this time frame that may not continue
yeah.
forward.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, those are all, I think, the normal things. Yeah, what's your concentration risk? What's your time horizon risk? The individual holdings and how they're performing. At some point, again, in retirement plans, it doesn't matter so much, but in non-retirement plans, what's your cost basis?
Right.
That's pretty relevant. So, and I think the biggie is, like, how much, you know, when are you going to use this for?
Yeah. Okay.
We've kind of discovered maybe the oversimplified way to approach this, but I feel like what our firm does for people is retirement planning, right? So you kind of have these stages. You're either growing toward right. retirement, you're entering retirement, you're in retirement, or you're retiring from retirement, which is, you know, a really clever way to say you're dead, right?
Right.
But how's the money going to move through those stages right. of your life? And money management is all about making sure that the assets are working efficiently and doing the job they're supposed to do for you. Okay. And so we don't need to overcomplicate this stuff, even though there's a lot of variables out there. At the end of the day, investing about owning value long term and then setting up the timing so that the money is available for you when you want it to be there.
Right.
Okay. And the rest of this is just optimizations, right? When do you take Social Security, or, you know, when do you turn a pension on or roll it over or whatever? Like, how should I set up my estate plan? Those are all optimization things. Look, we're out of time, though. So, look, bottom line, if you want help with that, give us a call at 541-375-0898. And you can check out info on our webpage at littlejohnfs.com. Till next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Justin Bergman.
You've been listening to True Wealth.